where people don't aren't where it's not available. And it only costs like $40 a year.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
What is this, doctor? $40 a year?
It's
to get onto the internet with a faster connection than a regular dial-up.
How we get this thing?
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Kim.
How's everyone doing?
Good.
Good. Who's on the call this evening?
This is Wanda Oliver.
Hi, Wanda. How are you?
Okay. How are you?
Good.
Hi, folks. Ron in Poughkeepsie.
Hey, how are you doing tonight?
Fine, thank you.
Good.
Hello, Kim. How are you?
Good, Krishna. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Only one thing I wanted to ask you. Could I ring you sometime?
Sure,
what is your telephone number?
Yes, you're more than welcome to ring me.
Yes. May
I can. Malcolm's on the phone.
Hey, Malcolm. How's it going?
Good. Aliza was on just a few minutes ago, and I told her she could take a break and come back in five, so she'll be back on in just a couple minutes.
Oh, okay, fine.
So, meanwhile, can you tell me your telephone number, Kim?
Yeah, it's 707.
Yes.
822-5807.
50?
707-822-5807. Who else is on the call this evening?
This is Mary Terhune from Boston.
Hey, Mary, how are you?
Great, thank you.
Good.
Hi, Kim. It's Deborah from San Diego.
Oh, hey, Deborah.
How are you?
Deborah was the interviewer for the last call.
Nikki Enriquez.
Nikki Enriquez, yeah.
That was wonderful.
Yeah, thank you so much for doing that.
My pleasure.
Who else is on this evening?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
This is Lori from Miami, Florida.
Hey, Lori.
This is Wendy Beneke from Lafayette, Louisiana.
Hey, Wendy, how are you doing?
Fine.
How's the weather down in Louisiana?
Oh, good. It's my first call I've ever been on.
Oh, well, welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, Kim. It's
Ellen Madono. I'm from
Hey, Ellen, how are you?
Good.
Good?
There was some way to prevent making noise or something?
Don't worry about it, because when Elise joins us, I will be muting everyone out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I control that.
Okay.
This is from South Florida.
Who, from South Florida?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name.
Ruth.
Oh, Ruth. Hey, Ruth.
Hi.
It's Andy from California, and Kim, you probably
Andy
know more.
How are you doing?
Good. You know more people in the homeopathic world, I think, than anybody.
Who else is on this evening?
This is Chris from Minnesota.
Hey, Chris. How's it going?
Just fine, thank you.
Good.
Sally from Washington State.
Sally, nice to have you on the call this evening.
Hi, Jana from Toronto.
Jana from Toronto?
Yeah,
welcome to the call.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm New Jersey.
Who's from New Jersey?
Donna.
Donna. Hi, Donna.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, I'm Callie in Portland.
Hey, Callie. How's it going?
Going well, thanks.
Good.
Hi, it's Marnie in San Francisco.
Hi, Marnie. How are you doing?
Hi, good. Thank you.
Good.
Caroline from Cobourg, Ontario.
Hi, Caroline. How are you doing this evening?
I'm very well, thanks, Kim.
Good. Anyone else want to say hi?
Hello. Elise, this is Lynn Snow in Encinitas.
Hi, Lynn Snow.
Oh, I'm sorry. Elise isn't there.
She'll be joining us in just a moment.
Wonderful.
This is Joy from Toronto. Hello.
Hey, Liz.
Hi. Hey, Kim. This is Mary Jo.
Hi, Mary Jo. How are
now
you?
Now in Florida, but I was from California.
You moved, huh?
Yeah.
Oh. How's that?
Well, we got here just in time for the first hurricane, so I guess it's not so good.
Okay. Anybody else want to say hello?
Hello.
Hello. Hello, is that Elise?
Okay.
Is that Elise on the call?
I don't think she's here yet.
Okay.
Suzanne from Nova Scotia.
Hi, Suzanne. How are you?
Or Ann from Nova Scotia.
Oh, hi, Ann. How are you doing? We'll be starting very shortly. We'll just wait for the speaker to call in. I'll just share an amusing story before she joins us. When we coordinated this call, unfortunately, we didn't get we didn't quite communicate clearly to each other, and as a consequence, it's now 2 o'clock in the morning where Elise is from.
Oh, no.
So she actually had to set her alarm clock to wake up, and we thought about changing the call to sleep disturbances, you know, just because we talk from firsthand experience. But we'll keep the original subject. So if she sounds a little bit sleepy or a little bit tired, that's not how she normally sounds, just so you know.
Kim, is this phone call supposed to be about an hour in length?
Yes, we'll run to just about an hour. That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's available later online?
It will be recorded, and it will be posted to our website. That's correct.
Okay, what about last week with Paul about the homeopathic, the flu and epidemic? Is that on the line now?
I'm not sure that it's been posted yet. It was recorded. We've been sometimes having difficulties where some of the calls that get recorded, for whatever reason, the company that does it for us messes up, and sometimes we don't get these calls. So there have been some instances where a call, for whatever reason, has not gotten posted. But our intention is to record all of these calls and to post them to the website.
And what is that website?
Yeah.
The website where you can access these calls. There's probably about 15 calls, 20 calls up there already by interviews of different practitioners, and most of them are just incredible. That website is www.whole, then the word health, H-E-A-L-T-H, now, N-O-W, so whole health now, all one word, all lowercase, .com. So www.wholehealthnow.com. And if you go to that page, across the top, you'll see a teal bar. And to the right, right below that, you'll see what's new. And if you click on the what's new, and you kind of scroll down, you'll see, you know, new recorded teleconference call with David Kramer or Paul Hersky or whatever. And if you click on that, it'll take you to the page where all of these calls are located.
And how does that work? Do you need a special technology?
Well, you'll need a real media player, but pretty much all the instructions are listed there. And
okay.
This is all technology. It's all software that you can download for free from the Internet. And essentially what you do is you click. If you've got a high-speed monitor, it takes a few minutes to download the file, and then it automatically plays. If you've got that's for a high-speed connection. If you've got a dial-up modem, then it might take a little bit longer, but it's, you know, really 15 minutes or whatever. It downloads, and then the file plays for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's word for word, is it? What's been recorded?
Yeah, and the quality is really good.
Yeah, the quality is very good, yeah. Yeah. And there are some really excellent, excellent calls up there. So has Elise joined us back in?
No.
Okay, I'm going to ask Nikki to give her a call and just tell her to call her now.
Probably fell back asleep. 5 minutes. Oh, I think I'll just take a quick nap.
How is getting better?
Hi, everyone. Has Elise joined us back yet?
No, I'm sure she'll be on any second. She was on at 5 minutes of, and I just...
Hello.
Hi, is that Elise?
This is Elise.
Oh, fantastic. Thanks for joining us. And, Elise, thank you so much for waking up in the middle of the night there and joining us for this call. I already told everybody it's 2 o'clock in the morning there, so... Everyone is extremely appreciative. So let's go ahead and get started. I'm going to use the same format that we always do. I'm going to conduct a formal interview for the first 45 or 50 minutes of the call, and then I'll open up the call to the participants, and if people have any specific questions that they would like to ask, we'll leave 10 to 15 minutes at the very end for those questions. Okay? So I'm going to go ahead and mute everyone out, and then I'll go ahead and introduce Elise. Elise,
okay.
Can you still hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay, very good. So, first of all, Elise, thank you so much for taking the time out of your very busy schedule to join us this evening and also to wake up in the middle of the night, which I know is...
I kept myself awake, so don't worry.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Well, let me just give you a quick introduction. Elise Timmerman is trained as a research biochemist and was involved in genetic research at the University of Amsterdam in Holland. Elise has also studied naturopathy and has received her degree from the School of Natural Healthcare in Amsterdam in 1980. Elise has studied with many different homeopathic practitioners. Two of her primary teachers were George Vitolkis and Vasilis Gagas. Elise has been in practice now since 1980 and began teaching in 1986. She also established the Hahnemann Institute of the Netherlands in 1988. And since 1992, Elise has traveled pretty much all over the world, Scandinavia, the European Union, North America, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Israel, and has lectured all over. And I personally have never heard Elise speak, but I've heard only wonderful
things. I am on the phone.
I've only heard wonderful things about her teaching,
her
brilliance in homeopathy, her ability to convey really incredible information in a very practical manner. A close friend of mine, Dr. Malcolm Smith, always just raved that I have to make it to one of her seminars, and so I'm hoping actually to go down to her seminar in San Francisco coming up very soon, and I know that's going to be quite an incredible event. So let me go ahead and just let people know that Elise is coming to the States and will be in Berkeley, California on from December 3rd through the December 5th, and she'll be offering a seminar called Homeopathy from the Heart, the homeopathic treatment of the dying process. And for people who might be interested in attending that event, they can contact Homeopathy West at their toll-free number, which is 877-850-5078. Let me repeat that again. It's 877-850-5078. Or if you prefer, you can email them at seminars@homeopathywest.com. You can also visit their website, www.homeopathywest.com. Elise, thank you again for joining us on the call. I know everyone here is very appreciative. I think this is a fascinating subject, and we are really excited to learn from you. I thought I would start off by just asking you if you could just give us a little bit of an idea of what is the difference between the treatment of the end stages of a person's life versus, you know, just the normal pathology that we confront in our practices. How does that differ in homeopathy?
First of all, we must realize that the body is disintegrating. You could say that the body tries to let the soul go in a way. And that means that the mental, emotional, spiritual process can be a process which does not go together. Not go in harmony with the disintegration of the physical body. And that means that if you think or see from a homeopathic point of view, if you want to treat a totality, you will see different reactions when you think you give a remedy for the whole picture, so to speak, for the whole totality. And by the whole totality, I mean the physical part, the emotional, mental part, and apart from that, the psychic or the spiritual part, that's, in my opinion, another level, you will see that there, you will often see pictures where you see splitted pictures. So, To think about this, it can happen that you give a remedy for the whole state, and you see that on the mental, emotional, spiritual part, the patient will feel very much better, and has the feeling everything becomes clear. It's clarity is a very important signal for going through this process, as I hope everybody understands, and you see the body getting, the physical part getting very much worse. And many homeopaths have been very, disappointed by this in a way. But it should open up the, you should be very realistic, and it's very important to communicate about these things with your patient. So the experience in this level of treatment is not that big because, well, do everybody see sometimes article about it? I haven't seen it, not a real homeopathic one. that shows also that the, well, in a way, the weakness of homeopathy, that we don't dare very much to come out with this information. But I've seen it over and over and over, and then I also understood there are maybe two or three levels of treating the patient, and that means that in some of the most well, sick people, for I want to say especially when I've treated AIDS patients, I've seen this. I've seen a shift of remedies taking place, which are really very, very healing, but very different remedies. There's remedies different from each other. Like you could have to give, so to speak, let me see, medurinum and mercury, and on the other side you needed to give phosphor. Can you follow me?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Because when you look to an AIDS patient and somebody's young, maybe 30 or 40, the dying process means that you go very, very fast through different development stages, and you also go very fast through the problems you have had in the past, and you try to solve this before you die. You try to make your soul ready to go. And that means you can go through the whole process well, very much faster than normally you see. Or you have a child with leukemia, you can also see this. And see this happening, and you have to be on top in the treatment. And the interesting things which I have seen is that the results seen from a certain level are very, very, well, maybe good is not the right word, but very healing for the patient. So in one way that makes it maybe difficult, because if you, in normal treatment in homeopathy, when you come to give one remedy and that remedy is acting on all the levels together, you can deal with that remedy quite a long time, because the problems the patient shows can show the patient on different level in through different phases, but it all can be the same remedy, which makes it a less complex treatment. In real chronic disease, you see this less and less. And already Hahnemann has learned us this a lot, has taught this in this chronic disease, of course. But this can be very hard and difficult for the homeopath. Maybe it's not at all so hard and difficult for the patient. And when we talk about the real end stage of life, a whole different kind of remedy group can come up, which are the, so to speak, new remedies, which are coming up much more as the old ones. And you can help the patient very well through the dying process. And even after death, we have done this.
Elise, you're saying that there's different remedies that you're finding are useful in this stage of a person's life when you're practicing homeopathy with them. Can you give us some examples of some of the remedies you found that are particularly useful at this time? Maybe there aren't some.
Yeah, of course. I can say some of them, and people can try to find them for themselves on the information. But one remedy is lotus. The lotus.
Lotus petals or lotus flowers?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's an important one, and an other remedy is sandalwood,
mm-hmm.
which of course is also used in India a lot during the dying process, and also after dying, of course. And that seemed to be a nice, good remedy. And the bad remedies, you know, the... how you call them in English? Bach remedies?
Oh, the Bach flower remedies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I used to work with it many, many years ago, that I used to work with these remedies. And I started to use them again a little bit lately because I saw, well, in these processes, it's a very light and soft way of treating. And that is sometimes you need. I mean, a remedy can... Sometimes you don't want it to do something on the physical level, only on the emotional level. And that is where this group of remedies can come in. I'm looking for this information. I can't find
it. No, that's very, very interesting. I'm just curious, with the Bach flowers, are you actually using the Bach flowers or are you using the flowers in the potentized homeopathic preparation?
No, the Bach flowers.
You're using the Bach flowers. Okay.
Yes, sometime. I told you I was a real classical homeopath, so to speak, that I used only homeopathic remedies. Mm-hmm. But now I started to use this again. In the 80s, we started here in Holland with the Bach flower remedies, much more as we worked with homeopathy. My colleagues like Jan Scholten and Pieter Kuiper and all these people used these remedies first before, or not first, but we were more easy with the Bach remedies as with the homeopathic remedies. And but during this part of our life, as I tell you, you need something sometimes very, very soft, very light, not wanting to work deeper in a way, and especially not on the physical part. And then this is a quite safe way, because you can understand you are feeling like a baby in the end of your life. You can be completely open. You start to feel very open. And every energy around you comes in. And you see this is very related to this group of plants which was used by Bach. And then in England, there are a lot of new ones, and they are very, very helpful. We have also in Holland Bach remedies, but I don't know them. But I saw a book about this, but I have no experience there.
Okay. Elise,
I tried to find this book for you, and so people can find out.
Okay, sounds good. Elise, I'm just curious, when you're treating somebody at the end stage of their life, is your objective just to palliate their symptoms, or is it even to, and this is kind of a metaphysical question, but is it even to affect what happens after their death process?
Yeah. Well, I found these books. I tell you one big problem for all of us is, you know, if you have a general practice and patients are coming, for example, for 10 years to you, and sometimes there are cancer patients, of course, in every practice, a lot, and everything goes well, and uncertain, if you are an experienced person, certainly you feel the remedies are working well, which you are giving, the patient... Well, it's happy with what is happening. I don't go into it too much. But you see more severe symptoms coming. You know, you see like chronic symptoms like ulcers or diarrhea, which never goes away anymore. And you see there is a lack of vitality. And then you have this kind of turning point that you see that every time you give a remedy, the patient says, I'm feeling better, but you see the energy going down. And it's expressed through the symptoms. And then you see a kind of turning point that then, whatever you do, there's never a real healing anymore. Not as you are used to see with more healthy patients. And it's... point where we usually realize this too late. You need to have experience to be really on top of that point, and then the treatment in a way is changing. Then we have to then it becomes palliative, and you can treat a little bit more palliative, but that is also the choice of your patient. You need to communicate this. You need to ask the patient how much suffering he wants to take, because through some of the suffering, you see there is, how shall I say, through some of the suffering, you see that the mind becomes more clear and healthy. And then you are already, behind the turning point, and you get sometimes the patient has a conflict and says, listen, I really want to get better. And you can see from the homeopathic treatment when that can happen or where that cannot happen. I tell you a little experience I had when I was in the beginning of my practice. I think it was in 83. I had somebody where the doctors in the hospital had said, you will die in 10 days. And he had a very big abdomen because it was full of water, and the liver was, I don't know, in destruction. And the man came to me and he says, the surgeon says, I can live only 10 days, but I'm sure I will live more than 10 years. What can I say? I mean, what could I say? Everybody has said he had only 10 days. And the only thing I said, well, I can look at your symptoms and we can give a remedy there, and then you have to wait and see. I don't know anything else. And I gave this man a remedy, and I never saw him again. He phoned me up after 3 weeks, and he said, I'm still alive, and I get another 10 years. And this man was very well in the here and now, and was very convinced that that would happen. It was not a kind of hopeless question or something. And the fatality, he had a big fever after the remedy. He told me he had the highest fever, whatever could happen, 41 and a half or something in Celsius. And he said he didn't want to call me because he felt very good during this fever. And we know that during this high fever, the body is making a choice or to survive, and then it's a big healing crisis, or to die. And, well, he has chosen this side, and he was very vital, and I think he was 56 or something. He said, well, through the crisis, the whole abdomen was gone. I lost 6-7 liters of I don't know what, water, he said. And he said, well, I don't even need to come back because I'm very well. And I think he was right. It's 20 years ago now. And he was still alive 10 years ago, so. So this whole cancer disappeared in a few days.
I guess you never know, right, when you're doing these things.
And but this was that you saw somebody going through a tremendous, deep, acute disease. It was not a chronic disease. It was an acute. And by the acute, he got rid of the whole problem. But in chronic cases, where you see the chronic state getting worse and worse, and when the mental emotional part is getting better, then you can be quite sure it is all going into in the. It's only palliative, and you can see that the body splits itself up, and in fact, to die, that's a normal path you are going. There's nothing, you know, nothing strange about this. And then the patient can ask you to help during this process. And in this process, people are very happy with homeopathy because you have very extreme symptoms. And the extreme symptoms lead you to a good remedy to prescribe. There is nothing like you're not doubtful about your prescription because the symptoms are very clear. And what you have to do is very clear. But you see in a short time, problems from the past coming up, like you see the law of hearing taking place, but it's also on a psychological level. And you can give a lot of help there, which is not difficult when you are not scared. When you are scared, you can hardly do this.
Elise, that makes me, you mentioned being scared, and, I know for all of us, the idea of death is a scary one, or at least for most of us. And so is there something that the practitioner, in their behavior that they have to be aware of when they're treating people during the death process?
Yes. First of all, you need to work on your own expectations, on your own models, so to speak. If you have a model from yourself that you have to do well as a doctor, or that you have to keep the patient away from death, or this kind of things, and you are driven by your own anxieties, then the patient is not free to do his process. And then you don't see what really has to be done. And homeopathy should be, in the first place, the prescription should be completely in the here and now, in the moment, so to speak, to understand this in the here and now. What is here and what is the now? What is the problem at this moment? Without the wish, I hope the patient is doing this or that with this remedy or something. That's the freedom of choice which the patient has, what he or she does with the remedy. That's not up to us. That's difficult to teach to students. But that's really nearly the only way. Otherwise, again, we are pushing the patients with our own demands in a way. I tell you, we did my colleague and me, we did some research, and she had many patients who were going to die. She worked in a psychiatric clinic, and she told me that, we found out together in this way that she had a strange experience that when she was on holidays, six of her patients died. And we looked at it, and she came to the conclusion that the patient could die because she was on holiday. And she already treated these cases for more than very long, like 1 to 2 years during this time that the patient was close to death, and she was very angry that they died when she was away, because then she couldn't help them. And the nurses said, well, now they felt free to go. And it was a very hard experience, of course. And this is where you see that the homeopath stopped in a way the process of the patient, and the patient felt a kind of duty to stay alive for the doctor. And when you come to die, you come to your essentials in a way. You come to know what was very essential in your life, and which problems you still have to solve before you die. So that becomes crystal clear. And you become extremely sensitive to this point. So we need to be open to the essential question of your patient. You need to know something about yourself in this area. You need to know what your essential goal is, what your essential want is in life. And we as homeopaths, in a way, have the duty to to find this out by ourselves. And that's in a way a little bit part of our profession, because that is what we project to our patient, and the patient during this process is much more sensitive to the projection as ever before. What we found out in the other thing, what we found out when patients were going to die, was we made this question that was with cancer patients, especially cancer. We made this question: why some patients could survive the disease and would be healthy afterwards, and when, in a way, we were working in a kind of hopeless situation. And there was one thing very important: when the family also was treated homeopathically, the possibility for healing was much bigger for the cancer patient. Do you understand this, Kim?
Sure.
Yeah?
Can you explain a little bit more about it?
Yeah, I explained it to you. When the cancer patient was alone during the treatment with homeopathy, you see two things. The cancer patient wouldn't feel much supported. And the other thing, what you see, is that the surroundings, so for example, the family, were so scared that the patient would die, that the patient, who was already losing like 15 kilograms and things like that, felt responsible for his or her own body, and also was responsible for the grief and the problems which were around her. And if you are very tired and you have to give up every day something you could do before, for example, you could walk, and then after one day you have no energy to walk anymore, or you can eat by yourself and the next day you cannot eat by yourself anymore. And you see these people suffering around you. In cancer patients, they feel tremendously responsible for this suffering, and they lose so much vitality by it that the whole process goes faster and usually not in a good way, not very nice. And if you treat the patients around the deceased person, and if they work on their own process together eventually with the patient, everything becomes much lighter and everything goes in a certain harmony and in a certain acceptation, that you accept the situation where you are in. And as soon as you accept completely where you are now, in the here and now, it means that the suffering will be tremendous much less, because suffering has mostly to do with homesickness, with wanting to be how you used to be, with not giving up what you have. And you see the remedies under, so to speak, homesickness coming up very, very highly in this process. I mean, with homesickness, the longing back how and what you all could do in the past and what your body could do in the past. So this longing to the past where your body was still very active, for example, and the tremendous grief around this. When the others already don't want to see that you are going downwards and just put the pressure that everything is going to be better and next week you can walk again or something. That's a terrible experience in a way, because then you are completely alone. You are can feel completely, yes, alone, forsaken. There's no communication possible. And whether in families, whether it's a complete refusion to say your mother is going to die or your uncle or your grandmother, then you block the process of the patient, and that gives a tremendous much pain and suffering. So we must be ready to ask the patient what they feel, what the soul really wants. And that means that we need to have a feeling of inner freedom, I call it. I mean, you could also call it love, but love comes close to freedom, to let that there is a complete freedom of choice in a way. And then the patient will free to show and to communicate on a deeper level from their own deeper, so to speak, I call it soul, and where the soul wants to go. And for example, in a remedy like carcinosinum, it's not a suicidal remedy, but it comes close to the feeling of wanting to die. In most of the carcinosinum patients is wanting to give up and wanting to go. Don't want this life anymore. And that's part of that picture. So if you come to this remedy, you can already have the conclusion, okay, there is a part who wants to go. And the carcinosinum patient can only communicate this when she feels that there is not a real demand anymore on her to put pressure in a way. And they are tremendously sensitive to pressure. That's why they want to be alone in the white room. I mean, that's a keynote from that remedy. They desire to be in a complete white room where everything is pure. You can just add that in your repertories.
Add in quick.
Yeah. In white, that means also that light and white, and that everything around them must not have any influence on them, must not take any kind of energy, not the most little thing. Even the colors of the flowers are important. So don't give them very red flowers or purple flowers or something, but it must be not intruding, because they feel everything goes inside the body, over their borders, you know, over their boundaries. And you know, it's a tuberculinis miasma is carcinosinum also, and this feeling of getting thin is losing the flesh, because the earth is taking it away. You know, it's this feeling. Everything around you will eat you up, you know. This feeling, it's very strong. And I have even a woman who takes a cap over her head, so she could not see, only a little part, because then otherwise she felt that she would be taken over or something. So,
Elise, you mentioned the soul quite a bit. Is this something that you feel that as homeopaths we can actually treat, the soul?
Yeah. And we must treat, no. The soul goes where it has to go and knows what it has to do. It's to treat means that we can manipulate something in that area. No. We can help the patient to so the patient would feel completely free to go with the flow of the soul in a way. And that will, on a deeper level, give the patient tremendous much vitality to go through the process. If that becomes, how you say, fluent, when it can flow in a kind of freedom. Yeah, and whatever happens, we don't have influence on this. We only can make it more easy. But where the soul goes, it goes. We have no, yeah. But I had a, arsenicum is used in this process, but in the higher potency from the C4, we see a much different experience with arsenicum. And if I come to the United States, I will take this remedy for everybody who needs it, because the C4 that is, you know, potentized and triturated a little bit differently, and it reaches this deeper levels in a way, and the level of the spiritual part much more. And you can easily do it like this for the physical part. You give a normal, like C12 or C30, and you can repeat this. And in the same time, you can give a high dose of the C4, and that works on a very spiritual level, and is also for very spiritual people who don't, who feel that they cannot leave the earth. And with very spiritual people, they have a very big problem in the dying process, because before you can die, you need to be in a good connection with your body. I mean, really with the physical body, because the task you had in this life was to connect with the body. And if you don't do that, and when you come to this place, the suffering is much bigger, because you still need to give your soul the possibility to have the experience to live and be on earth, because that was the path you had to go here. We are not for nothing in the physical body. And that is where we need to experience the material, the physical life, and we need to love it, to share it with our love. And in arsenicum patients, that's a very difficult part. It's very easy to go to their spiritual part, but it's difficult to go to be in the base in that moment, and to experience the disintegration for arsenicum is very, very difficult. And there is such a big wish in arsenicum to do everything in a kind of order, and it's a very refined way of wanting to do this, and that can feel as if you are failing. And in these moments, this C4 potency has given us tremendous much possibilities which we could never do with 10M or 50M. We didn't see these results. And so I think this should be given to everybody who needs it.
Elise, a lot of people on the call are probably not familiar with your C4 remedies. Could you just explain a little bit about them, and so they just a little bit more familiar, because they're probably not familiar with the terminology you're using.
Do you have a more specific question? Because you also maybe don't know so much, so maybe you can ask.
Could you tell us how you use them? I understand you use them in the development part of the person's life. Could you explain a little bit about that?
The most easy thing is to understand that these remedies work a little bit more on the level of the destiny, of the level of the purpose. And in the level of thinking in opposites, like in good and bad, you see more, that is more the normal C potencies working. They work more in the delusional part, while the C4 remedies works a little step higher, but it depends also on the person, and even on the homeopath who gives this remedy. So to make it easy in the C4 arsenicum you can easily use in these processes, because the whole problem your patient is in becomes very spiritual. So we all of us will come in this phase, and there these remedies have a very good action. So I would not use them in just normal cases, you know, people who come to you and have some problems. And you can use any good potency you think of. But in these deeper things where the not religious, more the gnostic part, where you have to do, where the patient is dealing with his overview of his life, with his destiny, with his questions about where do I want to go and how do I want to go there, and this kind of questions, these remedies helps in that area of suffering a lot. But more or less, it's very practical to say is that it's just one step higher, one little step higher, and it depends again on the patient who takes this remedies. And what I also have seen is when you treat with this remedy on this higher level, you can treat, for example, on a physical, for example, an AIDS patient who has a tremendous fear of death and feels that he still has to work a lot on his spiritual work and on his religious part. And he knows he has not enough time to do this. And the fear of death is becoming bigger and bigger. And he has, for example, a tremendous burning pain in his anus or in his abdomen. It's just like so sour and so extremely acid and biting. You can even do it, you give a C30 for the physical part and a C30 in the fourth for the more spiritual part. And it can work very well together. And is that clear?
Yeah, very interesting.
Is that clear for you?
Yeah, I think.
But don't think so. I hear so many stories that people make some stories out of this. I think when you become professional, you can try it out for yourself and feel if it works for you. That is, I think, more practical to do. And it sounds maybe a little airy-fairy, but it depends also very much on the homeopath, if these remedies are acting. And I was once so disappointed in homeopathy or in myself and in people who had to go to die. I thought, no, nobody in my practice is going to die when I do good homeopathy. Do you understand? Kim, do you understand it?
Totally understand.
Yeah. I thought, nobody's going to die in my practice, and yeah. Everybody will survive, of course. Otherwise, I've made mistakes.
Sure.
That little snake is still talking to you now and then. Huh? Mm. That is still waiting for you and making you very weak.
Elise, we're a little short on time, but I was curious if you could just talk a little bit about the treatment of suicidal patients with homeopathy.
Suicidal patient, is that a dying process? Huh? There is many different aspects to suicide. I had a patient who wrote me a letter who did suicide, and she she wrote me a letter to thank me for my love and my kindness. And I thought, oh, it's not such a nice idea for me. And she said, you were the only one who gave me the freedom to... No, you were the only one who respected me by listening to what I wanted in my life. And I wrote all the other ones a letter that I was very angry at them and irritated because they didn't respect my path which I had to go. And I really had to die because I cannot, I'm not from this earth, she said. I'm not from here. So she did not say, I gave you permission or something, but for me it was very clear that she was very longing to what we call the other side. And I gave her a remedy, and she made a choice very peacefully. It was only my pain, which was a problem in a way, not hers. And she wanted to be there. That was what she said. And she said that the people don't let me do this, what I want now, for so many years. And she even wrote a big advertisement in the newsletter and also explained this to a big audience. And then I had another reason for suicide. A very big reason for suicide is guilt. Guilt that you cannot carry along anymore. And I think in homeopathy we cannot treat very well the guilt, because the guilt usually is given by somebody else, and unconsciously the patient is carrying this guilt. So we need to give, for example, then a remedy to the patient, where the patient becomes very clear for himself and understands what method he can use to get rid of the guilt. And then you don't see that the remedy is taking away the guilt, but gives the clarity to do what to be responsible only for himself and not to the ones who give him the guilt, and gives the guilt back to the other ones. So there are many, many aspects to suicide. And one other aspect of suicide is that the surroundings wants to get rid of this person, because this person takes place which somebody else wants to take that place. How you can figure out this is looking to the system of functioning of the patient, and that's not a normal anamnesis. That's much more looking in the whole area of where the patient is living in, and then you find out that the patient is too much. That's one thing. So did you hear about the killing in the Netherlands last week, Kim?
No, I did not hear about that.
Well, it's a tremendous situation here last week, because one of the big presenters for television and makes lots of jokes about the Islam has been killed by a boy who by a terrorist, and or by somebody who how you call this? Yeah, by somebody who is in the jihad and wanted to kill somebody and go to heaven, so to speak. So this happens 5 days ago. And you ask yourself always, as a homeopath, how is it possible that somebody who's on a bike through the city and is killed in such a cruel way, And you see that the men had been very hateful about Islam and also about the Jewish people also, and made a lot of jokes about him, and has attracted, so to speak, this archetype. So could we have treated this situation in homeopathy? That is in my opinion, from a professional point of view, an important question. Can we treat not only the person, but also his surroundings, where he's living in? And again, I have seen with certain remedies that first the surroundings are changing, situation of the person is changing, and then after the person is changing. So this is also my question in this case, if there were possibilities or if the accumulation was so big that this had to happen. So there has been quite a violence last week in my country, and it has been the first real attack. And I just came back from Russia, where everybody now is scared and doesn't dare to go to theater. And of course, in our profession, these questions are coming up. What can we do with homeopathy about this? And the C4 remedies are treating much more the groups of people as only the individual. So we have to, a big development in homeopathy is still waiting for us. Is that clear for you?
Very clear and very interesting.
So in this interview, I put more questions than
ever. No, I wish we could continue the dialogue more because, you know, I think we're just touching upon some very important subjects. I'm looking at the clock here, and I know that it's 3 o'clock in the morning there. I know you must be very tired. So I'm going to unmute the call and let people ask a couple of questions. We are running over a little bit on time. But I did want to remind everybody that Elise will be visiting us in the United States, and if you really have any opportunity to go, it's going to be on December 3rd through the 5th in Berkeley, California, and the title of the seminar is Homeopathy from the Heart, Homeopathic Treatment of the Dying Process, and the toll-free number that you can call to get more information is 877-850-5078. The email address is seminars@homeopathywest.com. So, Elise, thank you again. I'm going to unmute the call, let people ask a couple of questions, but I want to just personally thank you for being so thoughtful and answering the questions in such a thorough and really very considerate manner. So thank you so much, and let me unmute the call and let everybody else have an opportunity. Hold on.
Hello, Elise. It's Lynn from Encinitas.
Who is it?
Lynn Snow from Encinitas.
How wonderful, Lynn.
Hello.
Nice, Nicole. Yeah.
Oh, it's good to hear you. I so appreciate your work. It's so important. And in the advertisement that Annika wrote for your seminar, she quoted your work in Tibet, learning for many years about the dying process. Could you speak a bit more about your experience and how your interest in this developed, and what resources perhaps we might be able to be familiar with before coming to see you?
What is important is to read the book of the Tibetan book of life and death. Do you hear me?
Yeah, she can hear you, but I muted her. I muted everyone else so there was no background noise.
Okay.
Yeah.
The book of life and death from Rinpoche, and you see there are several case examples in it. Also, not about homeopathy, but just about the process, and to learn to live in the moment and to be in the here and now. They give a tremendous good practice there in this book, and I think it's a must for every homeopath to read this book. I like very much the book of Stephen Levine, an American. And do you know the book from Ken Wilber about his story with his wife?
That's a lovely book about the death of his wife, yeah.
That's seen from a completely different kind of more personal point of view, but it's very good. It's very good to read this. Did you like it, Kim?
I love everything by Ken Wilber, but yeah, that's a very touching
book. Yeah, but it helps you also to come and come to this place and help the people.
Sure.
I made some very big mistakes when I was young and treating these patients, and I saw much later that I got three little children when I was in my 30s, and I treated a few of these cases because nobody else wanted to treat them. But I saw I made mistakes because I didn't want to face my own death. And then I could not really support in the right, to evaluate the cases in the right way, because I wanted only to deal with life, only to deal with survival. And so I saw I needed to do this training in Tibet to open my heart for this, and to start to let go of many things in my own life before I could help other people to let go, so to speak. So I had some patients which were in a way my teachers. Like in the book of Ken Wilber, the women became the teacher for him. I had similar experiences, and then I understood I had to do a very heavy training, and I did an 8-day training where I didn't eat and drink very little, and went through my own dying process. And it was a tremendous experience which in a way changed my whole life on the spiritual level. And well, there were many exercises, and in the seminar I like to share some of these exercises which you can do by yourself, and if you do them you come close to your, in a symbolic way, to your own experience of dying. And then you become very aware and observing to your own patients, and you come very fast to the essential problems and messages from your patients. Because a patient who's very tired cannot have an interview from 1 hour or something. No, not at all. It's all through observation that you have to decide what you have to do.
Okay, I'm going to unmute and ask. We'll have one more question. And
so Lynn is not saying anything.
Well, no, she'll be able to say something in a second. Hold on a second.
Hi, Lynn.
Thank
you so much.
I hope to see you.
I hope to see you, too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of background noise.
Yeah.
Particular, but
we like it.
Hard to shut up. Can somebody try to ask a question really loudly?
I don't know
that it's unfortunate, there's a lot of background noise, so I'm not sure we're going to be able to get to that. Okay, so I guess we'll end the call here. I will unmute one more time. Again, I want to thank you so much for waking up in the middle of the night and providing us with such wonderful, beautiful wisdom and insights into homeopathy. Again, you know, please, if you're interested, do contact the Homeopathy West for the seminar here in Berkeley on December 3rd through the 5th. And I'm going to unmute again. If everyone could just say a big thank you to Elise, that would be wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Elise.
Dag, Kim. Hello? Kim? Hello?